call the transportation meeting to order, and it is about 3 minutes after 1:00. And Representative Johnson, Representative Johansson, Representative Dugan, and myself, Wilson, are present. And I would like to recognize staff today. Nancy Hemingway is our House Recording Secretary. Luke Woodruff is our LIO moderator, and my committee aide is Becky Rooney. And before we start, please everyone shut off your cell phones and don't turn them just to vibrate. Turn them all the way off because they do interfere with our IT microphones up here, whatever you want to call them. Anyway, we're continuing our overviews today by the Department of Transportation, and our only agenda item today is a presentation of the transportation aspects of the stimulus, the federal stimulus package. So Frank Richards, our Deputy Commissioner of Highways and Public Facilities, is going to present the department's view of the stimulus package right now. And I must say that before, none of this is in cement because the Senate still has to pass it in the House or in Washington, and so changes are happening as we speak, no doubt. So anyway, Mr. Richards, if you would like to go ahead, we would appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Frank Richards. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Oh, and do you want us to ask questions as we go along?
Feel free to ask questions as they come up. As you said, this is an extremely fluid bill that is being worked through Congress. As it was described to us by John Katz out of the governor's office, they're jamming in a year's worth of appropriation into a couple weeks. So folks are burning the midnight oil back in D.C., and they're also sharing that opportunity with us by giving us late night emails and phone calls to be able to answer questions and the impacts that we see would happen in Alaska. So I'm pleased for the opportunity to be able to share with you today what this represents for Alaska. And I want to talk to you about some of the challenges that we have been facing looking at the rules of the funding, what Congress has putting on to the state DOTs for use of the transportation funds, and the significant challenges that we will be having to face to access these funds and get the projects out on the street in a very, very timely fashion. The funding levels.
And before you get started right away, I'll just want to recognize that Representative Munoz has joined us. Okay, sorry.
So quickly, the presentation outline today, I'm going to talk about the funding levels and certainly the differences that we see in the funding levels between the House and the Senate versions. Give you an idea of the actions that we have taken to be able to be ready to take advantage of these funds. What we've done to look at the universe of projects that we've had within the Department of Transportation and how we've selected those. And then some of the specific set-asides, those are specific fund sources that Congress has designated that the funds flow to that are outside of the Department of Transportation. And again, talking about the impacts to DOT and our consulting communities that are helping us work in developing these projects so that we can achieve the results, which are to put Alaskans to work. So primarily, as you know, the goal of this economic stimulus package is to revitalize the economy. And in the transportation section of this will also be to put Americans, and in our case, Alaskans, to work to take care of some of the great backlog of infrastructure projects that we have developed and the challenges that we have in not being able to put those projects out on the street because of the reduction in federal funds that we have seen over the last few years from the Federal Highway Program and the inflationary impacts that we've seen on the cost of construction over the last 3 years and the double-digit inflation that we've seen across the commodities and construction materials. We have had a growing deferred maintenance backlog across the modes, meaning our highway programs, our aviation programs, our ports and harbors, and our buildings, because of the funding challenges that we haven't had to be able to address those needs. And so what this infrastructure funds will provide to us will be additional monies to be able to take care of some of those needs, which will essentially relieve some of that backlog in the projects that we've had in our pipeline. So we see this as a very great help to us, and also as we look forward to the future of Alaska and for the gas line, we have identified to the legislature in the last special session infrastructure needs that we've had that we wanted to put into place to be ready for that gas line. This money and the projects that we have developed will be able to allow us to address some of those immediate needs. So let me start and talk about the rules of the road. The funds that we see coming down to us are going to be by the existing formula programs. So Congress is, because of the rapid nature of this bill, they see that they are not going to bypass the existing modal transportation programs that are in place under the Federal Highway for the Federal Transit or the Federal Aviation Administrations. So they'll follow existing formula programs in place. There's a great expectation by the public that that was not going to be the case, but in all indications of both the House and the Senate versions of the bill, that's what we see happening, coming the funds flowing through the federal administrations down to the state DOTs for distribution along those existing formula programs. That means that we must follow all of the prescribed federal regulations and restrictions on use of those funds. So that means that the development of those funds have to be done in compliance with those federal processes. Congress did not elect to relax any of the federal laws or processes that have been in place for some time, whether it be the NEPA process for the environmental, whether it be the uniform process for right-of-way purchases, or even for wetlands permits. So we are going to comply with all those federal laws, but it provides to us then a challenge because we have had to follow those processes to get to this point of putting those projects out for construction. And lastly, there's an emphasis within the bills that the monies be spent in areas that have been deemed economically distressed regions. In the
Frank,
House, excuse me.
I have a question. Is there any talk at all about lifting any kind of rules at all so that it would be a little bit easier for us to get any of this done quicker or anything? Is there any talk about it?
No, ma'am. The challenge was that they thought if they started looking at relaxing any of the processes, there were going to be consternation within either the House or the Senate, and that would maybe tie up the bill. So they felt that they would follow through with the existing processes and not get into that fight, that debate, or the prolonging of their actions that they want to take.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I look here, a couple of questions. Must have begun at the federal project, must have begun at the federal level. Go back to your previous slide, if you would. Must have begun as a federal project. What does that mean, that if we started it as a state project, that it won't be funded?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, what that means is that if it's a federal highway project, that we have had to have followed the processes that are prescribed to us by the Federal Highway Administration, that we must do all of the sequences, whether it be the environmental process, our right-of-way process, or our design process, following those guidelines. And with federal highway review and concurrence of those processes before we can proceed. So we can't then dump in a state project which has not followed those provisions. So that means that the universe of projects has been very limited in what we anticipate we can spend the money on.
Madam Chair, there was some talk about when we were approving a bond proposition and having our own fund last year, that the real advantage to that was we didn't have to go through all the federal regulations. So are any of those things that are in the bond or that we thought we would be better off paying for ourselves, Elmore Road, for example, in Anchorage, it went so fast because we can get it done faster, are those excluded from the economic stimulus package?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, that is correct, because we have not, as we discussed last year, the benefits of the general fund is that we can do a lot of those processes in parallel tracks. We can do our environmental document as we're doing our design. We can go out and purchase right of way as we're doing our design and get and advance those projects through those development stages up to the point of construction that much faster. With the federal process, they're all done in sequence. Environmental first, design, and then right-of-way prior to construction. So all the projects that you're going to see today have been in front of the legislature previously, seeking legislative authority, and on our state transportation improvement program previously, as we've come forward and sought legislative authority to proceed through those design steps.
Okay, follow-up, Representative Johnson.
I'd like to go down this a little bit. Are there any projects that the state is putting money into now that qualify under those federal rules that we could take the state money out of, apply to other projects that we don't have to have the federal hoops we have to jump through, and apply the stimulus money to those projects and take that state money that's in those projects and place them in the projects we really want to do?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, later on in the presentation, you'll see that there is a certification requirement by the governor that Congress has asked that all governors look back at their previous capital programs to certify that they won't do, as you just suggested, to take state monies and shovel in the federal dollars and use those state monies on other projects or elsewhere.
Darn it. I guess my last question is, who determines what economically distressed region is? And you'll probably cover that in a little
through
bit.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, a great segue into my next slide. Thank you very much. Congress on the House version identifies or encourages the projects to go into these economically distressed areas. And they, under U.S. code, it defines it as areas that have an unemployment rate that is 1 percentage point higher than the national average. So what that means in Alaska is essentially all areas of Alaska except for the boroughs of the North Slope, Fairbanks, Anchorage, Juneau, Sitka, and Ketchikan. And this map indicates those areas of the state and the current unemployment rates that we see around the state right now. So, for instance, Yukon-Koyukuk at 16.2%, out to the Aleutians East at 20.8%, and Prince of Wales and Outer Ketchikan at 16.5%. So it's a goal. It is not a defined amount of money to be spent in a prescribed area. It's an emphasis area as written into the bill.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you. So what does it mean that the bill encourages this?
It is essentially intent language by Congress that that the state DOTs look for where projects could go if there is, because it's the goal of the bill for jobs creation, that we would look to have projects which would create jobs in those areas with the highest level of unemployment. Now we have in front of you a map that shows the projects that we have identified that would meet the economic stimulus rules. About 60% of the projects that we have identified fall within the areas of economically distressed as defined by U.S. code. So we have a lot of rural projects across the state, and that's why our numbers are fairly high. I mean, mainline highways that are on the Parks Highway or on the Richardson or on the Alaska Highway, again, you'll see that they fall into those geographic designations that are economically distressed. But we also have projects in the urban areas or in southeast or in up on the North Slope that are outside of them. But Congress did not give us a defined number to meet.
Okay. Follow up, Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I'm anticipating something you're about to tell us a sheet or two from now, just tell me that. But does that mean or do you have enough projects that satisfy the economically distressed definition to soak up the money that you expect to get from the federal government under the stimulus package?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, and I will be going through the amounts of funding that we see in both the House and Senate version, and we'll talk about the actual project lists.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, ma'am.
A representative.
Thank you, Frank. The Lynn Canal Highway project is involved in litigation with the NEPA lawsuit or on the NEPA document. Would that project be eligible for any of this funding if those issues, if a decision on the five counts in that lawsuit were made?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, as you said, we are still awaiting the judge's ruling on the NEPA lawsuit, and funding, the legislature has provided funding to the tune of approximately $110 million, I believe is the case, through both federal and state funds to be able to construct the first portions of that road. That portion of the project is already funded through both state and federal funds, so we wouldn't be able to interject new federal funds and extract state funds from that process. So the full project still has work to do. I mean, going up through and paralleling north of Slate Cove, so there's more work that needs to be done on that portion of the project.
Okay, go ahead.
Another one of the provisions that Congress put into this is that states must use the funds or lose the funds, and the time frames that they place on us are very, very stringent. They say we must use at least 50% of the funds within 90 days. That means we have to go through the process, put projects out on the street, get them go through the obligation, and be able to identify to Congress that we have used that money, or they will sweep it back and send it off to other states. So they are very, very pointed in that states, they identify that they can use the money, that they use it and use it rapidly. Otherwise, there are others that will use the money. And in our case, we have identified projects that we say that we have more projects than we have available funding coming to us from either the House or the Senate version. So we could use other states' monies if they are not being able to be used by those. So I think we are in good shape.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
What does use mean? Is that just commit, sign contracts, make obligations for, write the check? I mean, when it says use 50%, what is that? To help me understand what that is.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the actual language in the last version of the House bill was obligate the funds within 90 days. What that means is that we essentially have to enter into a contract with the Federal Highway Administration that we have followed all the processes up to and the point of accepting or bidding or letting an award with a contractor, so that they can sign off and tell Washington that we have met the guidelines that Congress is setting on us. Our goal is to have those projects out on the street, get them awarded, so we will have construction in 2009, in the summer of 2009, turning dirt.
Follow up, Representative Johnson.
Having been involved in some of the state bid processes before, is it realistic to anticipate that in 90 days we could design, let, and award a bid? I mean, isn't that outside our procurement code?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the projects are designed. We are doing work right now to get them to the point of actually letting the contracts out to prospective bidders. It's the obligation is making sure that we have all the bureaucracy background taken care of and provided to the Federal Highway Administration to say that we have met all of their regulations and requirements. At the same time, we are going to have to do a STIP amendment. That STIP amendment will be going out in the next day or two. That has a 90-day process in and of itself. So we have competing efforts for our staff time and staff time and energies to be able to accomplish this. But we are working many, many hours to try and accomplish this and use the money in Alaska.
I'm a lot of questions, but I'm going to wait a while.
So let me understand if I've got this right then. So whatever the project is, it has already have to have gone through the EIS process. It already has to have its permits, and it already has to have the design, all those three done already.
Madam Chairman, that's correct. We would have had develop an environmental document, maybe not an EIS, but from categorical exclusion to environmental assessment up to a full-blown EIS.
Okay.
Get in concurrence with the Federal Highway Administration that was done in following their processes, the NEPA process, having gone and gotten right-of-way certification that the lands that where the roads are going to where the road projects are going to be are owned by the state of Alaska, and then follow the design process with concurrence again by Federal Highways that we have reached the point that we're ready to go to the next phase, which is construction.
So what's left is, and some of them are already in the bid process?
We have not yet bid them.
Okay.
We're ready to put them out on the street, but we need to make sure we've got money to be able to fund them, or contractors would be bidding on projects that aren't completely funded.
Okay. Now, there was some talk about extending it to 120 days rather than the 90 days. Has that happened?
The Senate version has different timelines than the House version. The House version is what I just showed you. Obligate the monies within 90 days for at least 50% of the money, and the remainder of the monies be obligated by the end of 2010. So there's two discrete timelines that we must meet on the House version. The Senate version, I'm going to show you the differences in the bills.
Okay, sorry. Representative Johnson?
50% of the money, and by 2010 we have to finish the project and pay for it?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the distinction is obligate at least 50% of the money allocated to the state
within 90 days. Right.
And the monies that we don't use in that first 90 days, we must obligate by the end of 2010. So say we get $100.
Projects don't have to be done by 2010.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Just obligated.
Obligated.
Okay.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a general question. We had a pretty large capital budget and a bond passed last year. Last couple of years, we've had quite a big chunk of money in the capital budget. What is the practical effect of we're going to get this stimulus basically dumped on us kind of out of the blue, and you're scrambling staff-wise to ramp up these projects? What happens to the capital budgets that we appropriated in the last couple of years? Is this going to you have a limited amount of staff. We understand they're working very hard to do this. Is that going to push timelines on all those other projects out, or are they supplanting? How is that whole relationship with all the authority we gave you the last couple of years going to play out?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, good question. We are we're working with our individual design squads and looking at what their workloads are. We're working with our consulting community and seeing what projects that they are currently working on and seeing how we will be able to utilize outside resources like the consulting community to be able to advance those projects that are already in the pipeline. We've looked at what the GO bond packages brought in to us this year, and we've actually looked at when we are going to be able to get to the point of construction of those. Most of that is in the design efforts over the next year to year and a half for those GO bond projects. These projects that we're focusing like right on right now are projects that have pushed through to the great extent through that pipeline of environmental design. And now we're going through the process of making sure that we put the bid documents into the state standards and that we are going to be able to put those out on the street. We are working, again, with the consulting community, with the contractors, and talking to them about looking at how the workload is going to be for them to achieve, and seeing how we can work as smartly and as efficiently as possible to make sure that we can utilize the funds and make sure that the projects that we have identified to the legislature that we can do, that we will do. Right now, we are working our staff very, very hard. They are responding very, very well. They are energized because this is an emphasis area that they see, you know, they're part of. We've got an emphasis to try and get something done in a rapid time frame, and they are rising to the occasion. And I mean, it's great to see. The staff is responding quite well.
Follow up,
Representative Johansson.
The other side of the equation is the construction industry. Are they stretched out pretty far now? I know you take this into consideration, the ability of the construction industry to actually have enough people and trucks and all that stuff to get this on the street. So I guess it sounds like you're obviously cognizant of that. So, I mean, as far as the economy, the ability to get those actually built and start turning dirt, it seems like it would have to stretch the pipeline out a little bit. And there's only so many construction companies in Alaska, and so I don't know if you have any comments on that or if you even understand what I'm talking about.
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, yes, I do, and we've had repeated conversations even in advance of this economic stimulus with contractors from not only Southeast Alaska but Interior Alaska, and they were identifying that from their perspective there wasn't work out there for them in their areas. What the projects that you see in front of you, we have good geographical distribution across the state from essentially just south of Prudhoe Bay down to Ketchikan. We've got the initial push of projects will have, again, dispersion across the state. We feel that the contracting communities that are out, the contractors that are out there, have identified to us that they have the capabilities of performing the work, and that we are seeing currently much more competition on the bids that we are currently letting. So, for instance, where we previously had one or two bids, now we're getting four or five. Or in terms of facilities, we're seeing 12 bidders come in. So this stimulus package, along with the existing transportation program that we have, it's positive for the state because we're seeing some downturn in other areas of the economy, whether it be oil and gas and or federal spending or mining, where they're slowing down or not expending as much, we're able to ramp up and provide work or those job opportunities to the contracting community and to Alaskans.
I'm going to stop.
So I want to follow up. So I think what I'm hearing him not say is that we aren't going to have to bring in somebody from the lower 48 or Canada or something, are we?
Madam Chairman, no, I don't. We're not going to preclude anybody from coming in if they have a desire to bid the jobs. But I think that this stimulus package is going to throw a lot of transportation funding across the nation, and so contractors are going to be going to work. What we have and what we saw last summer with the price of asphalt and the challenges with the high cost of oil was that the refining process of asphalt, there was more refinement of the actual raw product into fuels and not as much into asphalt, so that our asphalt prices stayed high. Now, we all know the challenges that we have with Flint Hills in their desires for better economics. That is some concern that we have out there, is will there be enough asphalt to meet the needs within the state of Alaska, and at what price?
Madam Chair, just quickly.
Representative Johansson.
For the new members on the committee, could we have a half an hour dissertation on aggregate?
The answer is no.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to offer to give that half hour presentation on aggregate, but I'm not sure how much of that I retain. To talk for a moment about the slide that we have up here, the governor's on the record as being opposed to the stimulus package. So what are all the worker bees doing running around getting ready for it?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, the governor has identified that, I believe, on the transportation program, that she is in favor of the federal funding to provide for transportation needs that have a benefit to the nation. and in this case, the Dalton Highway and the portions of the Alaskan Highway, in preparation of the gas line.
Follow up.
Madam Chair, Mr. Richards, not according to Alaska's largest newspaper, she's on the record as being opposed to the stimulus period. So you haven't heard that from her. You're proceeding along as if she's not, including telling us that there are going to have to be actual physical things she's going to have to do to make this happen, right? So I guess my question that's pertinent to this is, are you confident that the governor is going to certify that the state will maintain state funding in order for us to qualify for the stimulus package funding?
I would like to answer that, because I heard the governor say myself that she was overall against the stimulus package. However, if every other state was going to take advantage of it, she was too.
And will that serve for your answer as well?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, I did not hear the conversation the chairman just referred to.
But okay. Political barbering aside, what I'm trying to ask you is this. Are you confident that the governor is going to do this, which he has to do, in order for the state to qualify for this funding, assuming that the stimulus package is passed and it contains money for the state of Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, the direction that I got from the governor was to be able to identify to the legislature the benefits and the challenges that we're having with the language in the bill for transportation. This provision for certification has just come up, and so I have not had a direct conversation with the governor on this.
Okay.
We're tracking the legislation, and new things are coming at us on an hourly basis, so I don't have that opportunity to bring that.
Thank you, ma'am.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. While we're asking questions, there's been some talk about some stimulus money going not through the state but directly to communities. Is that in any of the bills that are there now, money going directly to Anchorage? If so, do they have to meet the same criteria? So what are they bypassing the state process in any form or fashion with this that so far, and I know it changes, I know it's a moving target, as of before this meeting started, for example, was there anything that bypassed the state and sent money directly to communities?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, great question. I've got a slide that will address that coming up.
I will continue to read ahead then.
Okay. He was ready for you.
He was ready for me. We didn't meet.
Do you want to? Okay. All right. I think we've got all of our questions answered for now, so proceed.
Okay, Madam Chairman, again, the certification by the governor that we will maintain our state-funded highway programs for projects that were listed as of September 20th, September 2008, and going forward. Again, a new provision. This is providing great challenges for other states, because many of the other states have state-funded programs where they rely on gas taxes to fund their highway programs. With the downturn in the economy and less folks driving, they're seeing the revenues come in, so they don't have enough money to go out and do their projects. So they may have had projects on their capital improvement programs in September, but they had to take them off in November. So this, if they certify that they're going to do those projects, then it puts them in a very difficult situation. So many other states are voicing their concerns about this provision to Congress. I just wanted you all to know that this provision was out there, and that truly, if we don't certify it, it will likely mean the loss of the funds entirely. The big picture now. What does this mean to Alaska? Out of a $829 billion stimulus bill, there's $45 billion designated for transportation. And for Alaska, our guess, based on the differences between the House and the Senate version, equates to about $500 million. And that's across the modes of highways, aviation, and transit. Now we get to the question of where the funds go. So in this, on the first column, H.R. 1, it's the House version. I will state quite frankly that it is much better for Alaska in terms of the transportation. It provides much more money to us in the highways and aviation modes, and provides greater latitude on the transit funding. So under highways and aviation, The set-asides that I talked about previously, those are programs, the AMATS, that's the Anchorage Metropolitan Area Transportation System. That is their metropolitan planning organization. The same for FMATS, that is the Fairbanks Metropolitan Planning Organization. They receive about 10% right off the top. It goes to those two communities for use on roads in those two communities. Enhancements at $7.4 million. This is with the subcategory called transportation enhancements. This is for sidewalks and bike paths and waysides. So again, a certain amount of money is taken right off the top before distribution to the state.
Question.
Representative Gruenberg.
Can you get me somewhere the legal definition for this purpose of the word enhancements?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I may have the expert here.
They're nodding and smiling. If you guys would take care of that with my staff, thank you.
And then if you'd give it to me, I'll make sure that every member of the
thank
committee
you.
Gets it.
Sorry. Thank you. Sorry.
Continuing on down the house, what we envision then the state share for state highway and bridge assets is about $187 million.
Question, Madam Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
What is CMAQ?
My apologies, Madam Chair. Representative Gruenberg. CMAQ is congestion, mitigation, and air quality. That is another set aside. But on the House version, there was not a designation that a certain percentage or certain amount had to go specifically to CMAQ or CMAQ. CMAQ is where we've previously, when Anchorage was designated in a non-attainment area, we had money under CMAQ that would fund air quality type issues.
If I may follow up briefly.
Follow up.
Is that something that is still available? You said when we didn't qualify in Anchorage under something, it would. You lost me.
I'm sorry, through the chair.
I'm a neophyte on this committee.
Representative Gruenberg. It's when portions of the state do not meet air quality designations, meaning there's particulate matter or there's CO in the air that means that we have exceeded federal air quality standards. Actually, the recent designations were Juneau and Fairbanks.
Really?
So it's the
and Anchorage is okay?
Yeah. I will defer to my expert. Is Anchorage no longer?
There are maintenance for carbon monoxide and their entertainment for PM2.5.
You're talking technical terms. Are they okay, yes or no?
Yes, they're okay.
Thanks. But Juneau and Fairbanks are not.
Right.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
So
you mean we're we're here and we're not supposed to be breathing this air?
Madam Chairman, it's actually the designation in Juneau is the Mendenhall Valley. It's really from wood smoke, and the issue in Fairbanks is, again,
wood smoke.
If I may, Madam Chairman, under H.R. 1, we show $74 million for transit. Again, AMATS, the Anchorage, gets it. It's $40 million of that for transit opportunities. There's a subset for $9.5 million that can be used for vehicles, buses, paratransits, commuter vans that will be distributed out across the transit organizations, and then about $25.8 million available for ferries and trains. Again, under the H.R. 1, we have the 90-day, at least 50% obligated, and the remainder of the money obligated within 18 months, and the use it or lose it. This is the bill that the House has passed. The Senate version now is, again, changing hourly. On highways and bridges, we're down to about $131 million coming into the state, with the distribution, again, AMATS and FMATS at about $28 million. So the Metropolitan Planning Organizations receive a higher percentage of the available funding, transportation funding, coming into the state than do the state assets and other community assets. Senate also identifies a certain portion going to CMAQ at $5.2 million, leaving approximately $80 million for state and non-MPO roads.
Can I ask the question? What do we do about wood smoke? How do we make it go away? I mean, I know tell people not to burn wood, but what else?
Wrong committee.
Madam Chairman, that's a great use for natural gas, and if we're able to have a natural, in-state natural gas line, we would be able to help the communities of Fairbanks and the surrounding areas achieve less.
Oh, so the money could go into the pipeline or something like that.
Madam Chairman, no, I was not. I was identifying what would be an alternate fuel source to wood that would be relatively inexpensive for the homeowners.
Well, what I'm trying to figure out, if they're giving money for this area, and if it came in through the Senate bill, and if we got it, what would we spend it on?
Madam Chairman, I'm going to ask my CMAQ expert to come and tell me.
Pipeline, I like it.
Jeff, if you would
Thank
like
you,
to
Madam
state
Chair,
your name.
Committee. Jeff Otteson with DOT. I'm the Director of Program Development. Our backlog right now of CMAQ projects is much smaller than in our other categories, so we are going to scramble if we end up with CMAQ money coming to the state. The non-attainment areas, particularly Fairbanks, being an MPO, would actually make that decision at their level. That's their prerogative to make under federal law. But we would be talking to our air quality partner, DEC, to identify projects. The problem with the two new non-attainment areas, Fairbanks and Juneau, is they were just designated last fall. It takes about 2 years after designation for DEC to go through the planning process and identify what the strategies are to use CMAQ funds. So we're very early in their planning process. We're going to have to scramble to use CMAQ dollars in an eligible way.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So do all of these, the AMATs and the FMATs and the enhancements, have to go meet the same criteria previously federally approved that we saw back on that other slide and the CMAQs? They have to be on the drawing board already, so all these projects have to already be in the queue, ready to go, and meet the federal. This isn't we're just dumping 22 or 23 million into AMATs and they do what they want to do with it. They still have to meet that criteria.
Chair, Representative Johnson, absolutely correct. AMATS is under the same timelines that we are. In fact, they're under a slightly tighter timeline. They get 75 days to use their money or lose it. The state gets 90 days.
Gee.
So they're scrambling right now. They're doing the same thing we are. They are getting their cards, their house in order.
Madam Chair.
Follow up, Representative Johnson.
Anchorage or Fairbanks are not in the economically depressed category. Was Fairbanks in the? They're not either. I don't think. So, is that money that can't go someplace else, or is an algebraic equation that because they aren't in the economic depressed areas that has to come from someplace else, or is that in addition to? Exactly how does that work? Does that mean Anchorage can't get additional money through the state? The state roads in Anchorage can't get it. Because there's a certain amount has to be in an economically depressed area. You see where I'm going is, does this money come off what we can do for the state roads in those communities?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the challenge was there was just an emphasis area to use money in economically distressed. There was not a designation or a certain amount to expend. The set asides for AMATs and FMATs is written into law, so that's identified that we must give that money to the metropolitan planning organizations. So the remainder of the money then would be used hopefully within the goal of meeting the running projects in economically distressed areas.
So they already get.
Yeah, so I guess there's a pie and there's going to be $30 million taken out of that pie for Anchorage and Fairbanks that are not economically depressed. Will that reduce the size of the pie, their portion of the rest of the pie, or will it reduce their portion of the total pie? So, I mean, there's money coming out of that pie someplace. And if we're going to strive to spend money, according to the government, in economically depressed areas, I guess I'm wondering what effect does that 22.4 and that 8.1 have on the pie as a whole? Are we going to have to, are the state roads in those communities, I guess the best way to say it, going to suffer as a result of the designation of AMATs and FMATs to balance that economically depressed goal.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, as I started off, the universe of projects that we have available to meet the timelines that Congress has placed on us is relatively small. This doesn't preclude us from spending money in Anchorage and Fairbanks if there were projects that we had available ready to go and be able to spend in those communities. We actually have projects on the Glen Highway in the municipality of Anchorage that will be expended. We've got, I believe, the portions on the Richardson Highway that are, if not within the North Star Borough, just outside the North Star Borough, so it'll be in the Fairbanks area. So there's not a decision on our part not to spend money in Anchorage and Fairbanks. It's really our decision on what projects we can proceed forward with is where they are in the development stage, and can we get them out on the street to obligate the money in these timelines.
Madam Chairman, if I could, are there any projects in the Anchorage and Fairbanks area that are shovel ready, 90 days, to allocate the money soon, that are not on this list?
I do know that there's some projects in my area that are.
Well, I expect you to be asking these same questions.
Minnesota, we're doing that another way.
Right. So Minnesota, Johns Road?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, specifically Johns Road.
Yes, where we're going.
That has not been designed and ready to go to this through the federal process, in my knowledge. Well, we have been in communication with the AMATS and as the MPO, and whether or not they're going to be able to meet their 75-day timeline. If they are not, we do have projects, a mill and overlay on Minnesota, which would address the running challenges on that road that we could put out in a rapid time frame and obligate the money. We then would in turn backfill the AMATS for the funds that they will share with the state for development of that project.
So is back, Madam Chair, backfill is not the same as taking money from a state project or a federal project and moving it to a state project? What's the difference between backfilling and supplementing? Explain the difference. How you're going to? I thought I understood you said you couldn't do what you just said you were going to do. Is take and backfill it in another project?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the project Minnesota. Rut repair would be a very rapid time to, how do I say this? We would develop that project rapidly because it is a mill and overlay. We're not doing a tremendous amount of work outside the footprint. We're not doing environmental work. We're not doing anything that's going to disturb any additional ground. We're just skimming off the rutted asphalt and laying it down.
I understand.
So that's the only thing that we could do in a very rapid time frame and meet these provisions.
I understand the scope of the project, but I thought I heard you say you had it planned to do that differently, but you could move it over into this federal project. Is that not what I understood?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the federal rules do allow us to move a STIP project ahead and use stimulus dollars and move those stimulus dollars back and put that on the STIP project as long as it happens in fiscal year 09. So we're talking about the difference of May to August, maybe 3 months at the most. So this little very short-term window. In Anchorage, we're proposing to do just that so that Anchorage does not lose their stimulus dollars.
Okay, are there any other projects that we can take from STIP and move over?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the only jobs that I'm aware of that are available would be more mill and paves. I mean, mill and paves could probably be done on another 100 miles of road if we chose to do that. But the way the bill's structured, the amount of funding we're giving to the MPOs is what's defined in law. So if we try to move more to the MPOs, then we do disservice to the remainder of the state. And the bill is very clear that this money is to be shared between the state, the MPOs, and the non-MPO communities, with an emphasis on economically distressed areas. So our job is to balance those needs in the context of the bill language.
Representative Johnson.
Are there projects in Wrangell that would fit that criteria? Or Ketchikan? Or Juneau? I think that's got
the future.
Bridge? No. No bridges. So I mean, my question is, are we looking at that in a way that we can, you know, are we taking in the whole picture? I mean, I know there's this plan, but are we looking at things that we can do quickly that will help these communities as well as the long-term 30, 60, 90 days? I mean, you had one project that I guess wasn't on the Minnesota milling. Are there others? I mean, I just, and don't answer this. You know, maybe it's a rabbit trail, but there have to be, I would think, projects out there that would fit, and I encourage us to look at all of that, and maybe you could kind of get back to me on it, and we won't take up committee time on those particular projects, unless Kyle wants to.
And so what I hear, you saying is that you've already talked with the AMATS people, and they aren't sure they can spend all the money they're going to get, so you've already trying to help them spend the money so they don't lose it, and in any way that you can.
Through the chair, yes, we've been in communication with both the AMATS and as well as the FMATS, because the money's, we're both tracking the bills and
sure.
Seeing how we can capture the money, put a last work.
So it's, I'm sure that the town or the city of Anchorage is doing double what they, you know, everything that they can to figure this out, just like probably all the other towns are. So, I mean, I'm sure everybody is rooting for this and hoping that they can have enough in their area to spend the money. So, and if I understand right, there's more projects on this list than there's money coming in.
That is correct, Madam Chairman.
Okay.
And the goal being, if I may, the goal being that we wanted, through our review of the universe of projects that we have in our pipeline, wanting to identify those that can meet the challenges Congress placed in front of us. So it narrowed it down, but we wanted to be able to bring to the legislature slightly more projects than we envisioned the monies that we are going to be receiving, just in case there's any hiccup on any one of these projects, we would have another to slip in and be able to capture and use the money in Alaska. And if there are other states that don't meet the use it or lose it provisions, that we would be able to say, we are ready and we can accept your money.
That's exciting. And I do Representative Johansson and then Representative Gruenberg.
Munoz as well.
And then Representative Munoz.
Following the lines of Representative Johnson, you don't have to do it now or explain it, but if this is the complete list in District 1 that under the guidelines are eligible, if there are other projects or overlays or any other projects that would qualify under this, I'd like to know what they are, and you can get back to me. You don't have to do it now, but you brought up a couple projects Representative Johnson talked about that aren't on the list. I'd just like a full picture of what's in my district and what would qualify. That's one thing. My other question, if I'm going to veer off the topic, if that's okay with the chair, to another topic that's on this slide.
I would rather stick to this topic right now, and then you can ask it when we get to the next one, because we've got more people that are on this topic. So,
fair enough.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a general question, and it's an appropriate time, I think, to ask it. To get as much as we can within the law, federal law, do there need to be any changes in state law?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I'm not aware of any changes needed. We will just need to be able to. We are going to present to the legislature a supplemental appropriations bill that would identify that we are seeking legislative authority to receive funds for these projects. And it's, again, 100% federal funds.
But that can be done through an appropriations bill, right?
Correct.
Any authorization language, non-appropriate.
Representative Gruenberg.
Sorry. Thank you. Through the chair. any non-appropriations authorization language that you need.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I'm not aware of any, no.
Through the chair. The reason I'm asking is because this is, of course, the authorizing committee rather than the appropriating committee. And I'm asking, as we're going along here, if there's anything specifically you'd like us to do on this committee.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I wanted to be able to present to you where we are.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Where we are in the process, the challenges that Congress is placing on us, and let you have get an idea of the work that we are doing to be able to meet that challenge.
I appreciate that. If there's anything we can do through the chair, please let us know specifically, because we don't have a lot of time here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Thank you, Frank. I was wondering about the STIP, the update that will be underway with the new STIP update, and the understanding that the federal Highway Trust Fund is bankrupt. So is there any feeling for what's happening with the Federal Trust Fund and the ability to fund future STIP projects? Is it that we're going to fund these and then we're going to be out of luck for many years? Or I mean, do you have any sense of that?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, I will again turn to my STIP expert.
Okay.
Through the chair, Representative Munoz. Very good question. We don't know. These dollars from stimulus are not coming from the trust fund. They're coming from the general fund. So the status of the trust fund and how does Congress address its ills is a chapter yet to unfold. All we can do is we are writing a STIP right now, a STIP amendment for the stimulus bill that covers the 09 year. But shortly thereafter, we'll be writing a new STIP for the 10, 11, 12, and 13 years. And we're going to write that STIP not really knowing or having a very fuzzy crystal ball as to what that future funding is. But I will say this, I don't think Congress will let this program just go into the dustbin of history. It's just really too important to the nation's economic health. Mm-hmm.
And that was Jeff Otteson speaking.
Thank you.
Do you have
a
follow-up question? Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Could you also explain the difference between stimulus fast award and stimulus slow award? I may have missed that.
Through the chair, Representative Munoz. Yes, what we refer to as fast award is, again, those projects that we must obligate within 90 days.
Okay.
And then the slow award, again, those projects that we would obligate within the 18 months or the 12 months. Again, on the column that is shown as Senate S1, the use or lose rule at the bottom, the time frames are different within the Senate version as opposed to the House version. They are 6 months for the Senate and 12 months versus 90 days and 18 months. So two different perspectives on expenditure of the funds.
Okay, I see no other questions, so go ahead.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you. I wanted to switch gears very quickly before we move to the next slide, although I already did.
You weren't quick enough.
On the last slide, 25.8 for ferries and trains. I'm sure that's a federal title or category. How does the Alaska Railroad, you know, ferries and trains, we've only got two. We have the Marine Highway, we have the Alaska Railroad. How does the railroad fit into this, being that it's, we just had a presentation of their success of selling bonds, they are capitalized, they have assets, they have leverage. How does your department look at one entity that has options and one that basically comes to the legislature and begs for money every year? How would you handle the 26 if it came in, if we got HR1?
The
relationship
chair.
Between those two entities. Nothing against the railroad, I mean, but they have options that other entities don't.
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, what we identified on that, the term of ferries and trains, we really wanted to show that the funds would be eligible to spend on that category of transportation asset. We have, through the STIP process, funds or projects that we know on the ferry system that can use all this money. We just wanted to identify to the legislature that the funding that is coming in through that category of transit funding would have the option of being spent on ferries or trains.
Just a quick follow-up.
Follow-up.
I'm not that familiar with the railroad. Do they go through the STIP process, or they're a corporation, I thought, and did their own deal? We kind of peeled them off and gave them a lot of land and whatever else we gave them. So how do they fit into this structure that the money's filtering down through?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, there are projects that the DOT undertakes that have ancillary benefit to the railroad. When we have at-grade road crossings and we want to separate the grade, and because it was the railroad was there first, then we have that obligation to undertake that responsibility. We work and use federal highway funds to do that safety improvement. I'm not aware of the CIP program that the railroad puts forward. They do not come to us, or they're not on the STIP, except for those items where we have road and rail intersections.
And
follow-up, Representative Johansson.
Yeah, I caught your testimony yesterday, and apparently it's a little vague on some of those projects. Who stands where? At least that's the gist I got yesterday in finance. So, but we don't have to get into that. But just wanted to make a point. That's all.
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, yesterday in finance committee, I was actually referring to the maintenance agreement of those road and rail crossings and some of the discussions that we were having with the railroad and in the dialogue again with Representative Stoltz.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, proceed.
Madam Chair, if I can expand upon the answer to transit raised by Representative Johansson.
Would you please state Jeff your Watson. Name? Yeah.
I'm sorry. The Alaska Railroad receives a great deal of money through the Federal Transit Administration, both in the past as earmarks and also out of the formula program. And when it's federal transit money, it does have to be put in the STIP. And so Alaska Railroad projects funded by Federal Transit do show up in the state STIP, and that's been ongoing for many years. So they show up. We have to have receive and expend authority for those dollars, and we transfer them over to the railroad for execution of the work. So there is a fraction of the money that goes through the STIP that eventually goes to the railroad, but that fraction is largely determined by formulas set by Congress.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
My apologies, Madam Chair, for misspeaking, but my STIP expert was there to correct me. Again, on the aviation side, the funds coming to the state potentially through the House version is much more advantageous as opposed to the Senate version. Approximately up to $231 million could come to the state through the Federal Aviation Administration on the House side. We have identified approximately 27 rural aviation projects totaling about $271 million. So again, we have more projects than available funding. And on the international airport system, again, 12 projects between Anchorage and Fairbanks International Airports totaling about $105 million. The user or lose-it rules still in place, as well as the aggressive 90-day and 18-month timelines. On the Senate version, they've reduced the expenditure or the funding by approximately two-thirds. They went from a $3 billion program down to about a $1.1 billion program. But in this case, again, it's their time frames were expanded from 90 to 6 months and then reduced from 18 months down to 12 months. This is, again, the Senate version right now is being worked daily, and so the challenges that we all have in terms of tracking that bill is ongoing. The one point I would make about the aviation program is the funds will go directly to the Federal Aviation Administration, and they will then parcel out those funds through discretionary projects. So it'll be up to the FAA to determine just which projects are funded. We have identified to the FAA the universe of projects that we have that will meet the guidelines, but it will truly be up to the FAA, the local regional office, as well as the administrator's office, to determine and choose those projects.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson and then Representative Johansson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Is if the Senate passes and let's just, you know, go to conference committee and the money from the House stays and the use it or lose it rule from the Senate stays, what effect would that additional 90 days of to start the project have on your list? Are there projects out there that are within that 90-day window that having the additional 3 months would add to that list? If it had to start in 6 months instead of 90 days?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I will refer to the map that you have in front of you. We have the fast list and the slow list.
Mm-hmm.
If we went from a 90-day provision to a 6-month provision, likely those we would be able to capture those projects that are shown on our slower economic stimulus list. The challenge with the Senate is that the backside is reduced from 18 down to 12. So we've got some of those projects on the slow list, which we envision we could accomplish in 16 to 18 months, we wouldn't be able to accomplish in the 12 months that the Senate version has.
So this, do you think this list functions properly under either of the two use it or lose it rules?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, our goal was to show projects that met the most aggressive and conservative timelines that Congress is throwing at us.
Okay, Representative Johansson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the FAA, do you have a list of what their projects are, and did you make a formal recommendation on projects to the FAA, and can we have a copy of that?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, we have Christine Klein here. She's been in communications with the FAA. If you'd like to hear from her, we'll ask her to come up.
Sure. If she has the answer, it'd be great.
For the record, Christine Klein, Deputy Commissioner, Aviation and Airports. Through the chair to Representative Johansson, we have been in contact with FAA for around the clock, basically, for the last week and a half. We do have a list. A lot of that is dependent on how fast we can get the rest of the designs for many of our airports. We are looking at, as Frank mentioned, we are looking at least $122 million worth of projects on the fast track. If I add the international airport systems to that, that would bring it up to almost $200 million, which is, right now, it's somewhat unlikely we would get that much funding. If we expand the schedule out further, we would have nearly $400 million worth of projects ready. Everybody is scurrying. The rules are changing. A lot of the rules haven't been defined yet. And so there are a lot of unknowns right now. We're just trying to keep everybody tracking so we have the projects ready right now. So I don't know if that fully answers your question, but we have been working around the clock. I have emails from the middle of the night from a lot of our staff right now as they work these issues. And the projects are across the state in every region. Majority of them are in our rural areas, I think, is what you had also alluded to. Where are the projects? But we do have a map, and I would state at this time, it is the DOT map that we are proposing. I'm not sure the governor's office has fully signed off on it yet, but they do have a copy, and we will try and get that to you here in the next day or two.
And if you, as soon as you can, and then I'll make sure that all the members
yeah,
have it.
Yeah, it is a department proposal, but it matches the numbers that you see here.
Good.
Madam Chair, just to follow up.
Representative Johansson.
So I'm just curious. It's a lot of money, and I'm you guys are having input on what FAA ultimately decides because they're the ones who decide. I'm just curious as to what DOT, and you don't have to answer it. You can get the list to the chair, but what I want to know is what things you guys are pushing for, because in this case we don't really get a chance to look at it. It's DOT and the FAA talking. So I'm curious as to what you're advocating for as far as airport projects, and specifically in general, but I'm also very curious curious about the medallion and capstone capital projects that we've been putting money, towers on mountains, et cetera, for safety of airlines. And if that's part of it, and you can follow up, we don't have to take up committee time, but I'm just curious as to what you're asking for and if those two programs are part of your request.
Through the chair to Representative Johansson. The projects, as Frank mentioned, for the FAA projects, they do have to follow very similar guidelines to the FHWA projects in terms of having the environmental, the permitting, the right-of-way done. And a lot of our aviation projects can take from start to finish over 10 years. So all of these projects you have seen at some point or another. They aren't a lot of new ones right on the table. They're things that have been planned in process, again, because we are required to follow the federal process. The funding is discretionary, and what that means and what is different for it from the highway side is that FAA dictates a lot of the priorities, but they have a lot more discretion in terms of what areas, what types of projects, like runway safety areas, surface maintenance, those types of things. That's really what it means. It's actually helpful for us because it gives us a greater range of projects that would be considered under this situation.
No other questions?
Well, I just, Madam Chair.
Representative Ruhnberg.
Back to what I was asking a minute ago. My question, and it's sort of an ongoing question as you come before this committee and maybe others too, that sometimes the question arises from a legal point of view, which law controls and definitions. And whether the federal agencies will look to, and I don't have anything particular in mind, you understand, but look to state law to define a term, and we could define it in a way that might make projects eligible, for example. And it's a general concept, and I'd like you to be thinking if federal law in some of these areas allows our state to, for example, make definitions broad enough that some of our projects could be eligible, and then we could say, hey, you know, state law applies in a particular definition, and this is what our state law says. And it's just something for you to keep in mind, and I'm not going to belabor it, but sometimes that does make a difference legally. I'm not telling you anything new, I know.
I would really caution on something like that, because when we do something just to change a definition for one area, it might wreck a whole bunch of other areas.
I don't want to do that.
You know, so we have to be real careful when we start doing things like that.
I would leave it up to you, but let us know if we can. Thank you. I won't belabor it.
All right, let's keep going here.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Again, what you've heard from us previously is we looked at the universe of available projects that would meet the criteria that Congress has placed. We have put forward a list of projects that you have in front of you. The process that we must follow is do a STIP amendment, an amendment to that State Transportation Improvement Program. That's going to be amendment number 18 on the existing 2006-2009 STIP. That will go out as early as tomorrow. And then what we need to do, and we've directed staff to do, is get the projects to the point of putting them out on the street so the contractors can get back to us in a timely fashion and be able to get the work out and underway. And then we're also preparing with our Office of Management and Budget then that supplemental budget request for legislative authorization for these projects.
What about the authorization for all the extra overtime? Is that going to be in the supplemental? Okay, sorry.
May I ask a follow up on that particular question, Madam Chair?
Yes, Rip, go ahead.
Can you seek funding for the extra work and the overhead you have?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, we have we've authorized existing project funds to be used to process through the to work through the processes that we must get through to make sure that we're there. We have the capital improvement funds available to do that.
Okay.
So we're making sure that we're using the money efficiently and smartly.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So again, we are completing the designs, the permits, and all the other clearances necessary for those that are listed and identified as the fast track. Again, those are those projects that we would have obligated by the May 15th timeline, determined by when the president signs the bill, is really when the 90 days will begin. We're completing, and we will take public comments through the STIP amendment number 18, and then we'll be able to final that, get it to the FHWA as well as the Federal Transit Administration for final approval. That's a key point. It's not just one federal agency, it's two that then must look at the projects that we are putting forward and to them. We have been in consultation and discussions with them. They know the importance of this bill, and they are being driven by Washington to work cooperatively and efficiently with us so that there is not a hiccup and that we are able to push forward these projects. We'll then enter federal aid agreements, and that's really the contract, the obligation that we would have met the congressional intent, and then we'll issue the bid advertisements for those projects. Now, getting to the point of how were these projects selected? Again, the universe of projects was quite limited because they had to have been in the process previously. We looked at the rapid timing that Congress is placing on us to see which ones we could fit within those guidelines. We looked to see where those projects fell across the state and if they actually touched into or will be work developed for economic distress. And then we looked at the mandatory set-asides for the Metropolitan Planning Organizations, the Congestion Air Quality Mitigation, as well as the transportation enhancements. And then we also had the challenges that neither the STIP nor the EPA nor other federal permits are being waived. So we have to make sure we get a clean project that can go out without any glitches. That means that we as an organization have got to have laser-like focus, that not only that everybody in the organization has got to be chugging on the same cylinder so we can get those projects out and put Alaskans to work. And lastly, the FAA is going to be the ultimate decision maker on the projects that will be funded within Alaska. Many of you have seen this slide before, but this gives a pictorial depiction of, again, those federal processes that I talked about. A typical federal highway project is now taking anywhere from 7 to 10 years from inception to completion. That's a long time. And as Deputy Commissioner Klein said, sometimes aviation projects are taking over 10 years. Some of our counterparts in the other states are seeing federal highway projects taking up to 13 to 15 years. That's an extremely long timeline. And part of it is due to these individual sequences that must be conducted and completed and authorized before we advance to the next. Environmental, before design, before right-of-way, to construction. We have to have our projects through all of those phases and ready to go into construction. That's why it's virtually impossible for a new project to be brought in and go through all those processes in the very short time frame that we have in front of us. We looked at the mandatory set-asides. We looked at what the governor had identified to Congress as her prioritization, which was gas line readiness. We looked at the safety.
Could you just go, a mandatory set-asides, does that mean like FMAT and AMAT?
Madam Chairman, that's correct.
Okay.
We looked at the projects that we had developed for improving the safety of our highways and airports. Again, the economic distress criteria, and look to see where we had other dollars that we could leverage. And then also with the major emphasis of getting the projects out shovel ready, turning dirt in 2009, so we can get, again, folks to work. The two MPOs, Anchorage and Fairbanks, will select the projects within their boundaries. We as an organization, DOT, are part of the of those organizations. We chair those committees, but they are made up of, in Fairbanks, the mayors of Fairbanks and North Pole and the borough, And in Anchorage, it's the mayor of Anchorage that is also on that committee. So we work cooperatively with these. The same rules are applying. As Jeff indicated earlier, the MPOs on the House side have a 75-day provision, which makes it their projects even much more aggressive. They have to go through a revision of what is known as a TIP. That's their transportation improvement program document to be able to show that these new projects will be going into the construction phase as well. And as we heard earlier, we're looking at almost up to $73 million sub-allocated to those two MPOs through the transit and highway funding. So we've discussed this repeatedly, but why do we look to existing projects? And again, it's that they were started, they followed a federal process. We had developed these projects and brought them to the legislature so that we had received legislative authority previously to go through the various design phases. And we looked into that universe of projects that we have a backlog on that could meet the guidelines that Congress has set upon us. And many of these projects have been through a public process. There is strong support for the completion of those projects, and we have worked with the legislative finance committees on those projects previously. So in summary, what we have is approximately 272 centerline miles of roads that will be resurfaced, plus 18 miles of trails. We have 10 bridges that will be repaired or replaced, four in local communities, meaning non-state-owned bridges. We have two ferries that will be partially funded. Those are, one will be the new partial funding for the Alaska class ferry, and the other will be for the airport shuttle ferry in Ketchikan.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The four local class bridges, they're community, they're in cities. Did I hear you say that right?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson. Yes, if you can refer to your list, again under the slow award projects, we have Juneau off-system bridges. These are two bridges in the community of Juneau. I think one is the trestle leading up to Silver Bow Basin. The other one is out in the Mendenhall Valley. And then there are two off-system bridges in the Mat Sioux. These are bridges that have been developed following a federal process, so we can expend the funds on those bridges.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Again, focus on safety. So we're looking at adding passing lanes, improving lighting, and installing roundabouts. And then on the transit side, providing vehicles, buses, paratransit vans, and commuter vans in about eight communities. And then on our airports, being able to spread the funds through our international system and up to 18 other rural airports.
Madam Chair, Representative Dugan has a question.
Sorry.
Right before me.
No, please go ahead.
I was just curious on, again, the last slide. You're moving awfully quick, Frank.
I am, okay.
You talked about earlier resurfacing being something that it's not really breaking any new ground and you don't have to go through all sorts of hoops. Does that 272 center miles fit into that category of things that, you know, you just kind of grind it up and resurface it? Are these the type of things where you don't have to jump through all the hoops? You've got these projects that have to go through all the federal little trail that you have to get to, and these seem like the ones, if you had any money left over, you could do, but without a whole lot of problems.
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, you are correct. Those type of mill and overlay, those rut repair type projects, are rapid type of projects that the department could push out because they are relatively simple. They aren't impacting any ground, so the environmental process is very quite easy. The challenge with these projects, though, is that they don't employ a lot of people. You have a milling machine that grinds off the asphalt, and you've got a truck fleet to take the asphalt away, and then you've got a paving operation that paves it. There's not a tremendous amount of labor work, there's surveying work, or you know, other specialized trades that are part of that project, so your labor pool for mill and overlay work is small compared to a major reconstruction project. So it has the advantage of being able to get out and work quickly, but somewhat of a disadvantage in the amount of jobs that are created by that type of work.
So, Madam Chair, is that a lot? I mean, 272, I don't know. It just seems like, I don't know. Is that a lot of...
Through the Chair, Representative Johansson, that 272 represents not just that mill and overlay type of work, but includes pavement work in areas where we are reconstructing the road embankment, such as the Parks Highway, Willow to Cashwitna. We've got a segment of road that has distress. We're going to take off the surface. We're going to do embankment work. We're going to raise the grade, and we're going to repave it. So it's that type of effort as well as the rut repair.
And Madam Chair, if I may just quickly follow up.
Representative Johansson.
Does some of that work require you to jump through all the hoops that you talk about, or is this all in that same category of easy?
Through the Chair, Representative Johansson, the project that I just spoke about on the Parks Highway, we had been developing that project. We've gone through the environmental. We've done the right-of-way certification. We've completed the design. So, yes, okay. We had previously done that. It's been in the works now for 3 to 4 years.
Thank you.
Are all of the ones that you're talking about, even the just the resurface, are they on this map?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little confused here. I thought the original word about this was that there were about $175 million worth of projects, which included, if my memory is correct, about three sections of the Dalton Highway that the state was going to try to get stimulus money for. Is that not right?
Yeah, it's here.
Through the Chair, Representative Dugan,
it's not there.
In the governor's letter to Congress, she identified the priorities of the gas line infrastructure, which included Dalton Highway projects, Alaska Highway projects, and I believe that there was a Parks Highway project, in addition to the work then on the Kodiak launch facility.
Thank you.
So those projects, we do have identified Dalton Highway work, Parks Highway work, and Alaska Highway work, and I believe in the fast track, they're all in the fast track portion of the list. If you, Madam Chair, number five.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Excuse me, where's the Alaskan Highway?
The Alaska Highway runs from our border with our border to the east with Canada, and then runs into Delta Junction.
Okay. Yeah. The Alcan Highway is this what I'm used to calling it.
That's correct, Madam Chairman. So again, the legislative role, all federal funds, including funds going to our MPOs, must be appropriated by the legislature. We are working on that appropriations bill with OMB, and we'll be presenting that as soon as we know what the needs will be in the other areas of the stimulus package that are non-transportation. We have the blessing of having worked this process because we're getting federal funds. The other areas are slightly more complex, and so other state departments are looking at that bill and trying to determine for themselves what funding may be coming in and what legislative authority they will need themselves.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you. And sure, just to go back for a moment to the summary of work selected. In order to get an actual summary of the work selected, you'd have to take this and add in the stuff we were just talking about, the Dalton Highway and the Alaska Highway, basically rebuilding the road there.
Through the Chair, Representative Dugan, the work that is identified here is inclusive of those projects that you're looking at on your map.
I'm sorry.
See, they're here.
All I'm trying to do is understand this part of it, Madam Chair. It says 272 centerline miles of roads resurfaced. Is the work on the Dalton Highway contained in that number?
Through the Chair, Representative Dugan, yes.
But if I might, Madam Chair.
Representative Dugan.
This seems to be, resurface seems to be a term that includes everything from rebuilding the road to milling it and repaving it then. Am I correct in understanding it that way?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, that's my understanding, yes. When I got the data from our staff, that was my understanding.
Okay.
Am I correct?
So reserviced is really a pretty big term here.
That's correct. Rather than having a litany list of rehabilitation on Dalton Highway, drainage work on the Alaska Highway, we lumped them into this broad category called resurface.
Right. Madam Chair, if I might, it just confused me because normally when you're talking about resurfacing, you're talking about, you know, running a grinder over the road and putting new pavement on it, or even digging it up and putting new pavement on it. You're generally not talking about rebuilding the road, which is what I understand some of these other projects are. So anyway, thanks for clarifying that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Johnson?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. That kind of answers my question, but... You know, you've stated that you have more projects than you have money, or you have projects ready in the queue that you don't expect to be funded, I guess is another way of saying that. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson.
Depending on Senator House for, you know, gyration, yeah.
We've identified more projects than we anticipate the funding coming through the stimulus package to fund. What that means then is that those projects would be eligible for regular STIP funds going forward. I mean, they're already STIP projects, but they've met the criteria, they're ready to go. So as STIP funds are freed up by this, because some of these projects are already on the STIP, then that will allow other projects to proceed down the queue towards funding for construction.
So and I guess my question is, and I understand rebuilding the Dalton Highway is very important, but if you're talking about resurfacing or grinding, is that the best use of this money as opposed to some of the other projects you may have in the queue? I just want to make sure that we're using it. If we have 100 projects, we're getting, you know, 1 through 100 and not throwing in 108 by grinding a road. Are we utilizing the money in the best possible way?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, we grappled with the criteria and how to define which projects should proceed forward. But again, the universe of projects, the pie, as you called them, was relatively small. Safety is paramount to everybody. When you look at the ruts on the Glen Highway, which the legislature did appropriate general fund dollars last year to address portions of the Glen Highway, where we are augmenting that with economic stimulus to do more portions of the Glen Highway, because not on a daily, but certainly on a weekly basis, I hear from the drivers on the Glen Highway. My boss, the commissioner, drives the Glen Highway daily, as does the governor when she's in Anchorage. And so we hear the constituents that use that road and try and address the safety aspects. So we're presenting to you what projects that we feel in our best judgment will provide for a safe system for Alaskans.
And not because you've had complaints from the commissioner
Johnson.
Or the governor.
No,
I just want to clarify that, because that's
through
what
the chair,
Madam,
through the chair, Representative Johnson. No, I was not getting direct intervention. I was just identifying two commuters on that portion of road.
Of many.
thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to be clear.
And for what I understand too, that you're trying to get everything, your ducks all in a row, because maybe, perhaps, hopefully, we will get money that other states won't use, and that's why you've got way more than what you can use, because we just might have some extra money.
Madam Chairman, that is correct. As well as, if, for instance, there is any hiccup on any of those projects, we wanted to be able to utilize the available funding to us. If we didn't identify them and include them in our STIP amendment, we wouldn't have the legal authority through the federal highway process to be able to receive those and expend those funds. So there's a myriad of steps. It's an orchestra that we're trying to conduct in, as so that the music that we're playing is produced well.
Okay. Madam Chair. Representative Johansson.
I'm wondering if I can. It seems like you've narrowed a list down according to maybe how much money you're anticipating. You know, you've got a list here. Can we get a copy of all of the projects that qualify? The ones that you said we sat down and kind of
looked at safety and you weighed different factors and came up with this list here that you're presenting to us. What's the big list that you chose from? And I assume it's the same six people that you testified earlier kind of get together in a room and talk about through your 15 pages of criteria in the STIP that we went through. I'm not sure how it happened, but do you have the big list that you chose the different levels from that we can look at and find out what other projects you've deemed that didn't make it up to the top of the list just for informational purposes?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, yes, we have a list of the STIP projects that we have had in the pipeline, and that is really the universe of projects that we looked at. So we'll be glad to provide that.
But if I may follow up, Madam Chair.
You may follow up, Representative Johansson.
It's basically what's in the STIP, is that what you're telling me?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, again, it's those projects that have been through the federal process,
right,
and those projects have been in the STIP previously. Okay. And received legislative authority previously to advance to this stage.
And I had a real quick question on that slide that you went by real quickly, wondering if we could go back to legislature's role. I don't know, did we go through that one? did we skip that one? I don't know. I'm just curious about the last point about needing excess appropriation in order to potentially capture extra stimulus funds from other states. I mean, can you explain what that means? I know it means that you'll have more wiggle room if there's more money available through money taken back from other states that might not be ready. So, I think it's a good policy to be ready in case there's more money. If we excess appropriate for all these above and beyond number of projects, what does that do? I mean, does that give you the ability within the STIP to, as DOT is so skilled at moving money around to different projects within the STIP, I mean, are we giving you another basically list of projects that you can shift money around into? I mean, is it broadening your options in the future, in the next 2 or 3 years? That's the STIP we're going to live with. Are you getting more options to possibly have more flexibility in case there are construction problems as we've granted you that flexibility? Does it broaden your list of options in the future of where to shift money?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, I'm going to bring my STIP expert back up so that you can hear it from the expert.
Mr. Otteson.
Jeff Otteson, again for the record, Madam Chair, and through the Chair, Representative Johansson. The value of excess appropriation, whether it be the stimulus package or in an ordinary year, considering the rules of the federal program are this. If we had exactly the appropriation that matched our federal dollars, not an extra dollar more, not an extra project more, every project that got slowed by a federal or state permit or by a right-of-way lawsuit or some other delay would be dollars sent to 49 other states. We would lose those dollars entirely, and we'd have no way to spend them in this state. The federal program requires that we have the ability to move from Project A to Project B to capture those dollars within a fiscal year. So we absolutely need that flexibility. I realize that can be a sore point when a project slows down, but we slow down projects by and large for external reasons that we can't control. We're under the dominion of many, many agencies with who have governance over our projects.
Madam Chair, quick follow-up.
Representative Johansson.
I understand that, and I know I beat this to death, and I'm sure you're tired of it. I'm not trying to say that you guys are doing anything, you know, a little shaky there, but is this excess appropriation that you're requesting for the stimulus package? I mean, we already grant that anyway, and is that just proportional to the stimulus? Or, I mean, this is obviously more, I guess, flexibility. You already have flexibility, I believe. I think that's kind of the norm of us to give that to you, so you're going to have more flexibility, and I guess you might need it, but does the flexibility you already have, you can use that with the stimulus money because you already have the flexibility, or is there a difference there? I just don't understand.
Through, Through the chair, Representative Johansson, we're analyzing right now this list of projects against legislative appropriation we already have. In some cases, these projects are already in the next capital budget that's been submitted to you this year. In other cases, we have legislative appropriation, but we need a little bit more because the cost of the project has gone up. So what you're going to see in our stimulus request will be a combination of some projects don't need appropriation at all. We're okay. We already have it. Other projects need a little bit more to cover the shortfall since the projects have gone up in price. And a third class of projects that need a fresh dose of legislative appropriation. As far as how much we're trying to over-program or excess appropriation, it's about 30%. And we're struggling inside how much, what's the right amount? You know, we don't know. We think some states are going to have a hard time with 90 days. And we want them to have a hard time with 90 days. So, you know, maybe it should be 50%. Maybe it should be 20%. That's kind of a judgment or policy call. But without that, we will definitely not get as much extra money as might become possible.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So, Mr. Otteson, if we assume for a moment that the federal government gives us $100 million just to make this easy, and that's the final number that sorts out for transportation projects for the state of Alaska from whatever conference committee version of the stimulus bill there is, you're going to come to us for $130 million worth of expenditure authorization under the theory that you may need more than that because of either problems with the project you've got in the first $100 million, or you might get lucky scoring off the state of Washington or somebody. Am I hearing that correctly?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan. Exactly. And that, in essence, is how the program works each and every year.
Yeah. I just, Madam Chair, if I might.
Representative Dugan.
The question, I wanted to make sure I understood that. And then, so when you come to us for that excess appropriations authority, it'll be tied to projects, right? I mean, there'll be instead of giving us $100 million worth of projects, you'll give us $130 million worth of projects that qualify in case you have to shift from one to the other. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, it's actually a little more complicated. It will be in extra projects, but we also typically each year ask for sort of unnamed appropriation so that, let's just pick an example. Say we have a project in Spinard that we think costs $10 million, but the bids come in at $12. We need to have some way to grow the size of that project in legislative appropriation or we could not award it. In other words, we have to have flexible appropriation power to add to that project. So we need a little bit of both.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd forgotten what agency we were dealing with there for a minute, but well, Mr. Otteson has reminded me. Thank you.
And I actually forgot that how hard everybody fights for their part of the world. So, but my concern is that everybody across the state gets their fair share, and that's where I'm coming at. I'm not asking for more for this district or this district or just this district. I just want it to be, you know, fair so that everybody kind of has extra things going on in their area. So, and it looks to me like you've tried to do that in with looking at population and whatnot. So I appreciate that. Representative Johnson.
I just hate to move off this slide. Thank you, Madam Chair. How are we doing on that excess appropriation? Do you have a list of projects where we've had that, where we were 30%? Have we spent it? Is there overages? Is there anywhere, where's that accounted for? I mean, if we spend 35, where's it accounted for? If we spend 28, what happens to the money? Is it swept? What happens? You just keep it in this floating excess pool of money? What? Tell me technically what happens. If you need 100, we give you 130, you don't need the 30, what happens to that 30 million?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, two things. We're asking for 30% on stimulus. We don't ask for that much in a typical STIP cycle, annual budget cycle. So we're talking about a very special circumstance, this stimulus bill. The The authority that you're talking about, though, it's important to understand this, is not technically dollars. It's permission. The federal dollars come to us in a different way, and what we do is we match authority up with those dollars to do a project. You are giving us permission to receive and expend federal dollars. If you really analyze how the budget cycle works, you give us legislative authority on a class of projects to receive and expend federal funds. Those federal dollars have not yet been appropriated by Congress. We're in front of their appropriation. So that authority sits on the shelf, but don't think of it as actual cash. It's not. In the world we work in, the federal dollars, we get so much each year, we have to have the ability, the permission, to match it up to our legislative appropriation. And then we have a project.
Follow up, because I don't think you answered his question.
Well,
where is that accounted for? Madam Chairman, thank you. Where do we see that overage, the number? And secondly, it is dollars. Someone's paying for it. It's not coming from the United. It's not coming from Alaska. I pay taxes, and so to say that that authority is not dollars is not appropriate, Madam Chair. So anyway, where is it accounted for? Where can I find it?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, it is accounted for in our capital budget documents. We have people that are keeping track of that to the penny.
Excellent. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
How much excess do you have currently on the books?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, I don't know that number. It's remember, your authority is largely given to us by projects. So it's a series of projects, and it has to be projects that are queued up. We are in a position right now where a great deal of our excess authority is going to be used by the stimulus. We're going to take a lot of our shelf projects and we're going to put them into the ground. We're going to actually make them happen. This is all a good thing. And I'd like to make one other point, because it goes to the issue of, well, how big is our universe of projects? Which ones didn't make it onto the list? The best analogy I can give you is you're standing in line for a first run movie and you've been told that you're going to be in the fourth or fifth showing. You got a long wait. You got to let all those people in front of you get into the theater and watch the movie and wait your turn. And suddenly, a series of buses show up, and they take the first three showings, and they drive them off to another theater, and they let them watch the movie there, and you're now first in line. That's what's happening to STIP projects. Projects that might have been in the 12 or 13 or 14 year of the STIP without stimulus are now going to move to years 10 or 11. So even projects not directly accomplished by stimulus are benefiting from stimulus. That's just the simple truth of it. We're like an assembly line of projects that are moving through this system. So if we do a big glut of them at the front of the line, everyone behind them is moving up.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
You said 30% is not the norm. This is higher. What's the normal request for over authorization? In a regular capital budget year, what do you usually ask for?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, we don't normally over-request in the annual process. What happens is the price of projects grows, inflation occurs, and thus we end up with over-appropriation year by year because of that inflationary factor. So we're actually asking in a typical year, we don't need to ask for extra. We've already got some built up because the price of projects has climbed. That's been particularly true this decade. With stimulus, we have a very rare set of circumstances. We have no time to come back to you. We don't even have time to come back to LBNA and get authority. We have to be able to act, be nimble. We have to act quickly, matter of weeks. So we're making this request because of the unique law that's being put in front of us. And I think it's to all our benefit to do that. To not do that would certainly to let some other state benefit when we might would certainly not be the right outcome.
Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair, quickly, Jeff could probably explain to you that we have the ability and have in years past captured money from other states that couldn't use it. So I'll let him explain.
Right. If I may, every year in the month of August, every state is quizzed. How many projects are you going to get done by the end of the fiscal year, which happens in September? Are you going to use all your money, and could you use extra money? Alaska historically for its 50 years in statehood, has been a net winner in that process. There's never been a year we did not garner some additional funding from other states. That means other states are letting money go. We've been quick. It's because we had that ability to move and be nimble, and it's benefited communities all across the state.
Thank you. And we're not quite done yet.
Madam Chair, how's your timeline? I've got just a couple more slides, and yes, are we at 3 o'clock adjournment?
That's what we were planning on, so.
Okay. It was not my role to rush through this legislature's roll slide. I truly want to give it its just. Quickly, we've got a couple of slides here that we have Q&A. Many of the subjects we've talked about in this particular case, adding projects to the list. Again, they have to have been gone through the federal process, which means they would have been in the works for the last 2 to 7 years. And even the slowest projects, again, must be in the capital budget this year because of the timing sequence that we've talked about earlier. We have got to have those identified in legislative appropriation, legislative authority received for those so that we would be able to do that work in the 2010 timeframe. How can new projects benefit from the stimulus? As Jeff just explained, the projects that we have been in the STIP and we'll advance those through. That fourth showing of projects will now float to the top and we'll be able to then address those needs. The communities that we serve out there are clamoring for us to do the projects, and they get frustrated with us because they see them in the STIP and they're not getting done. This will allow them to advance. Key point, more than a typical year's worth of highway and aviation construction is being funded through this STIP process. That's allowing and opening up the room for the next generation of projects to be funded. We also understand that communities are out there, and Congress has identified that funding will be going to communities. However, the challenge is that any projects that are going to be funded are going to have to follow those very, very tight rules that are fixed by law. For us to be successful, we've had to focus on the limited resources that we can proceed from, that small pie of projects. And we are, as I said earlier, have a staff that is hard charging, and we're diverting our resources to be able to achieve these projects in the timeframes that we have. Can DOT sub-allocate to communities and let them proceed? The simple answer is no. The funds will flow to us through the Federal Highway Administration, and all of those requirements under the federal rules will apply. FAA has concurred with this analysis in their review of both the House and Senate versions of the bill. AMATs and FMATs are going to be the only true set-asides where funds will flow directly to communities outside of the state DOT. And this is where the MPOs select their projects and DOT executes the projects. Now, you've heard us talk about a STIP amendment, and you've also received probably correspondence from us that we have our 2010 STIP document out there. Those are two very necessary documents for us to be able to receive and expend federal dollars. The STIP amendment is going to be critical for us because we have got to get that out for public process, back and reviewed by the two federal agencies, Federal Transit and Federal Highway Administration, to have them concur so we can proceed and go forward with that project. At the same time, we've put out and identified to the legislature and to the communities that we have the 2010 through 2013 STIP document. That's where we're asking communities to, again, nominate new project needs, look at the scoring criteria that we have been using to score and rank our projects, get those comments back to us so that we will be having that STIP developed over the spring, summer, and then having it in place so we'll be able to expend and receive funding starting in the federal fiscal year 2010. Both of these efforts are legally required, and they are very time-consuming, but there is a public process, and we're out there talking to the public and the communities. So what does this mean to DOT's workload? As Representative Johansson asked earlier, we have to obligate approximately $240 million by May. That's a tremendous effort. The staff is working and hard charging to develop that. The next guideline is going to be obligating the remainder of the funds, our regular program, which is another $450 million worth of projects, between the June and August time frame, and then in October through August of 2010, obligate the remainder of the stimulus funding as well as our regular federal program in the 2010 fiscal year. Bottom line is we've seen approximately a 50% increase in the workload over the next 18 months.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got a little snapshot of your operating budget for 2010 this morning, and it didn't have additional personnel to do this. So how are you going to handle a 50% increase in your workload without hiring more people?
Through the Chair, Representative Dugan, we are working with, we do to a great extent have consultants that assist and perform work for us. We'll be relying on the consulting community to assist us through this effort.
Follow up, Representative Dugan.
I understand that you can outsource it, but you still have to pay for it, and it doesn't show up in your operating budget. So where does the money come from?
Through the Chair, Representative Dugan, what we talked about this morning was the operating budget. This is through the capital budget. So through the CIP program is where we expend those funds for the consultants.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, if I may, the department sent communications to each and every legislature providing a fact sheet and a bit of information. If you have questions that you get from your constituents, we also have up on our website, www.dot.state.ak, a link to our economic stimulus projects. We have this presentation, as well as the fact sheets that I just referred to, available, and we're referring folks to that. We are keeping that as up to date as we can as we get information coming to us from congressional staff, as well as from our DC office. So with that, Madam Chairman, I am done and would be happy to answer any questions or...
I think we're questioned out.
Well, we could spend a couple more hours here as far as I'm concerned.
Welcome to transportation, Madam Chairman.
Yes.
We would be glad to come and talk the STIP anytime.
Okay. Well, we will have you back, I'm sure. So thank you very much. And next week, Thursday, actually. Is it Thursday, Becky? I can tell you what we're going to have next week. Let's see. All right, well, we're going to be hearing House Bill 100, the Joseph C. Williams Sr. Coastal Trail Bill. And that will be the only bill that we have. And so hopefully that'll be a simple little bill. And it won't take very long. But having said that, thank you, everyone, for coming. Thank you very much for coming and going through that and putting up with us. So we thank you, and now we are adjourned.
Thank you.